got guests with us this morning. We have Justine Murray. She is the director of the Ethan Murray Fund. Good morning, Justine.
Good morning. Thanks for having us today.
You betcha. And the us includes Matt Connery, vice president of the Ethan Murray Fund.
Good morning.
And you know, Jack, the two of them had the most unusual, what do I want to call it? You know, the anticipation of a marriage and then the
engagement.
Engagement, mm-hmm. The trail of the Pacific Northwest Trail. They were hiking and then, woke up going, hey, let's get married. Is that the way it went?
I mean, there might have been a little tiny bit more details and planning, but that's very close.
Okay. I'll leave it up to you guys to set up what you want to talk about. These two incredible people walked 1,246 miles of the Pacific. Do you have the exact mileage marker where you got married?
Oh, that we don't. It is Caribou Creek. Up in North Priest Lake, because it is a creek that we passed also on the Idaho Centennial Trail going north.
That's right. And that's right.
Yes. So
cool.
Yeah, and we crossed the creek this hike as well, so it intersected. So we thought it would be a very special place to have our ceremony. So
neat. But let's talk first of all about the Ethan Murray Fund, an overview, and then your experience, because. You came on, I think, in May before. Oh, the phone is ringing.
Yeah. I don't know.
Could be well-wishers.
Are we taking questions?
Yeah. Okay. Call again later.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Go. Sorry. I turned off the ringer. And whoever's calling, call at 9 o'clock. We'll get the phone then. Where were we? What were we just going to say?
Justine was going to give a overview.
Okay.
An overview of the Ethan Murray Fund and how this ties in with their adventures this past summer on the trail.
Yeah. Thanks, Jim. I appreciate it. And I appreciate your guys' support. So I started the Ethan Murray Fund in 2021 after my son Ethan was killed during a mental health crisis. We felt like there was a lack of resources in our area and wanted to do what we can to not only bring more resources, but also the awareness for mental health in our area and help break stigma that's associated with those that suffer from mental health issues. So we're doing right now a lot of offering counseling services and outreach and collaborations. We have some really fun things that are in the works right now. One of the things that we're hoping to do this winter carnival potentially is to show a film at the Panada. We just started talking about it to the new executive director, Rob Talbot, and he seemed very excited about the idea. But we'd like to bring more definitely outreach and films on mental health. I feel like there's starting to be some good releases out there and some important work in the outdoor industry as well, too, with skiers and more athletes starting to talk about mental health. And we're really excited about one film in particular and hoping to show that. Another thing we're doing is fostering future mental health professionals. So something new, we're meeting with the high school actually this Friday and talking about scholarships programs to offer high school students that are pursuing careers in mental health or have grown up with their own challenges or family members in their household. So we're really excited about that. So doing this hike, we wanted to do pledge per mile and raise money for these resources that we're doing here in the community. So we had a sign-up sheet at La Chic Boutique, my business here in Sandpoint, and we had one at our gym we use, Sandpoint Strength. They also had a pledge sheet, which we were able to secure pledges per mile and flat donations. So super exciting.
Oh, absolutely. Before we go much further, can you, if someone is interested in finding out more about the Ethan Murray Fund, is there a website?
Yes, we do have a website, and we're on social media as the Ethan Murray Fund on Facebook and Instagram. And we also have a website, which is www.ethanmurrayfund.org.
Okay, and now let's get to the nitty-gritty of the hike. On what date did you start?
We started June 20th. And we did what's called a flip-flop. We started in Orville, Washington, and hiked from Orville, Washington to Glacier National Park. And then once we completed that first section, we actually got a ride from our friend Hal in a plane. I need to back up a minute. We were picked up by our buddy Darren, and he drove us back to Sandpoint, and then we resupplied, and then we flew back to Oroville. And then from Oroville, we headed towards the Olympic National Park.
Okay, and the reason for the flip-flop was that, what, Glacier was still underneath a ton of snow?
Yeah, we worried four things. It allowed the snow to melt, the creek crossings to go down.
Oh, that, right,
Trying to beat some of the heat in the middle of the summertime in the middle of Washington, and fire season, which we ran into. So,
Can't be avoided.
No. Now, what was the mileage from Oroville, Washington to Glacier that you walked in the flip part of your flip-flop?
It's around 600 miles.
So that'd be about half.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Oh, wonderful. So on what date did you make the flop?
August 3rd?
Yeah, it was the beginning of August.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And how many miles per day? Did you do the nitty-gritty? How many miles per day and that sort of thing?
We try to keep it at about 20 miles a day.
Whoa.
And then towards the end of the trip, we slowed down, kind of take it in. We had a friend join us, Fish, and we slowed down and a little bit, and the Olympics are absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, we wanted to give more time for the ending, and definitely there was a lot of passes we had in the Olympic National Park and the coast as well. So, mm-hmm.
20 miles a day seems like a lot to me, somebody who doesn't hike.
It would be a lot in Iowa.
Yeah.
But we're talking up and downs, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely a lot of up and downs. This trail was full of them. There was no easy days. It definitely had a lot of challenges. I wish I could say there was a day I remember just like whistling along, but there was either a climb or a descent. There was always something. So, yeah.
Were you guys, what was like the average day like? Were you up with the sun and walking all day long?
Yeah, in the heat of the summer, it really motivates you to try to get going on trail.
Yeah.
Because you want to try to get as many miles in. Because there's days where you go from shade to shade spot to take a break, just trying to, so hot. But get up, pack up our tent and get everything going, eat a quick bite and get hiking. And then we hike until almost the sun goes down.
Yeah, I do like to be in the tent before dark. I do have a little, I know Matt could keep going, but I don't know. There's something about having the tent set up and being in the tent before dark. So I do prefer that.
Mm-hmm. She likes to get her bearings.
Yeah. Is that a play on the word?
Yeah, bearings.
Bearings.
did you ever miss that goal? Did you ever end up hiking late, setting up, pitching a tent in the dark?
Yeah, there's days where you're pushing it. There's a day that we were in the Pasayton Wilderness and there was, you're hiking through places that had burned. It was all day. It was through a fire burn. And the last 8 miles, it had burned the previous year. Mm-hmm. And it was very difficult to get through. And that was pushing it. We were setting up and the sun was going down but the views in the North Cascades are just amazing.
Yeah. Is this the kind of hike where you have to, do you have reserved campsites along the way, or you just walk until you're saying, this looks like a nice spot?
Through the national parks, you have to, Glacier National Park and Olympic, you do have to have reservations in certain areas.
Yeah.
And the Park Service is amazing. They really work with you, especially in the Olympics. I had to call ahead. And if you do 500 continuous miles on the trail, they will accept your phone call and you can do it on the phone. And the gentleman talked to me for 2 hours.
Wow.
To make sure that everything was going to be safe.
Wow. That's impressive.
Yeah. It is. Cool. He was giving me, especially along the ocean, there's that stretch, he's asking what kind of water filter I had, making sure we had tide charts, and then emailing me tide charts to make sure that we had, knew how to read them. There was one beach a week after we had hiked it where a young woman in her 20s was pulled out to sea and drowned.
Oh, wow.
Because of the tides?
Because of the tides. It was a rogue wave, but then she got sucked into a riptide. So.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah, wow is right.
Now, did you run across many other hikers while you were out hiking?
Oh, gosh. That was the fun part for me. So doing the flip-flop and going the opposite way, we did, which was really great because they were starting in Glacier and we were starting in Oroville. So we actually got the opportunity to bump in.
And talk ahead.
Yes, and talk ahead and behind. Like, hey, what's coming or what's forward? So that was really fun. We did meet a lot of Europeans on the trail. And one in particular we met when we were actually in our area from Sweden. And we asked him, like, why this trail? You're out here solo. You're doing this trail. Like, what is it? You know, you come from such a beautiful country and I'm sure there's, you know, beautiful trails. He said, yeah, there are, but there are lots of people and you don't get much nature without the crowds. So he said here, he really appreciated our vast wilderness and that he couldn't experience that anywhere else. So we thought that was pretty neat. And as we talked to more people, we did get that.
Yeah, he didn't, to be able to experience, to be out in the wilderness and not see another person for a week is something that he can't experience in Europe. So things that we take for granted.
So did you have many days with no people that you come across?
We did. In the Pusaten Wilderness, in Yak, in Montana, and in Washington.
Yeah, but altogether we did keep track. We ran into about 45-ish or so other hikers. And then it was pretty funny because we were on the Pacific Crest Trail. It intersects with the PNT for about 26 miles.
That's right.
And guess how many people, you guys, I want you to guess how many we ran into in 24 hours.
I'll say 46.
I have no idea. 45.
Whoa.
Just kidding. No. Okay. I'll say you saw 20 people.
125.
I was almost going to go the other way and say 100 people. Oh, dang.
And, okay. And that was Pacific Crest hikers?
Yes.
Now, when you were doing the flop part of your flip-flop, were you hiking in a bubble? I mean, were there other people you were seeing and then maybe wouldn't see for a couple of days, then you'd see them again?
That's a really good question. So it was a lot of fun because of the people that we met. When we were going eastbound, we caught in up to them and saw where, so we were able to see them again after like a month. And that was a lot of fun. So there was a little bubble going on at different times.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Neat. That's half the fun. Now, did you take any 0 days?
Oh, quite a few.
Yeah, any town where we can stop and you can eat food and have a bed and a hot shower, we're all about that. But other hikers weren't. I mean, we met this amazing father and son that became our trail family for 8 days. David and his 15-year-old son, Holden, who were from North Carolina out here doing the trail. And it was really special. But how they caught up to us, we had heard they had doing a flip too, and they were behind us about 8 days. Well, we all caught up to each other in Eureka, Montana, because they took no zeros.
Wow. You know, I guess when you're 15 years old, you could do that.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, and he was the one waking his dad up. It was really cute. We'd all, when we started camping together, we'd hear the alarm go off, and his dad would say, like, oh, 5 more minutes, and then all of a sudden you'd hear Holden deflate his pad, and his dad would be like, okay.
Something that was a lot of fun with those guys, too, is they swam in every lake.
No.
So it could be 6:30 in the morning and they would be stripping down in Glacier National Park and, you know, that water's that blue color from the glaciers and they're jumping in.
Yeah. Very inspiring.
That's one way to wake up. We're talking with Justine Murray and Matt Connery from the Ethan Murray Fund and talking about their hike, which was also a fundraiser as well for the Ethan Murray Fund. They went about 1,200 miles this summer, if I have that right. We always talk about the weather. I got to think about the weather. Did you guys run into any problems out there? Did it get wet?
We did have chances or times of rain. In the Kettle Crest region, there was thunderstorms. You would be hiking, it would be a beautiful morning, and then you just see this little tiny cloud that turned into a thunderhead that would just sit over a mountain that you got to go around. And so, that was interesting.
Yeah.
We did run into that one hailstorm too.
Oh, ouch.
Yeah, it was funny. There is a, talking about dark clouds, there is a really dark cloud coming, and it always happens when you're about ready to go over a mountain pass and have to decide if you should chance it or not. Uh-huh. So this one, I look over and I see this goat trail, and I was like, gosh, I wonder where the trail goes over there. And Matt looks at his map and looks at me, and I'm like, no. He's like, yeah, that's our trail. It's not a goat trail.
Yes, it is thundering out, and you have to make that choice of keep going or not.
Or
and,
stop, yeah.
And we went for it, and Justine was angry.
Yeah, I was. And luckily, though, no lightning. We did get hailed on for a few, and so a little rain, but we have to say the weather in part was pretty dry this summer. I mean, that's why the fires were picking up again, and we didn't have a lot of rain. I mean, it definitely looked like it could rain potentially, but just dodging all these different storms in the mountain passes. But Olympic National Park, we did get some, obviously it's also a temperate rainforest. We did get wet, but yeah, for the other part, I'd say we stayed pretty dry.
Now I know with the AT, they have white blazes every so often on the tree. Now, is this trail well marked, or can you get lost and end up in the Yukon?
You could end up in the Yukon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. It's just wondering.
Yeah. It's not well marked. And you're really thankful when you do see the symbols on the tree, you know?
Yeah. There was some areas that remember, like around Yak, Montana, or some of the areas where somebody was out there definitely marking really well. We'd go in and out of areas where there would be trailblazes and the PNT symbols, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. was really nice. But some of it, yeah, Matt had to do a lot of, you know, using his maps. And I mean, his trail name is Map for a reason. So we never get lost.
How about wildlife?
Actually,
Matt looks at Justine.
You know, like. You can talk about it.
Okay. So it was not a lot. A lot of small critters. Mm-hmm. We saw a lot. We saw one mountain lion. And the next day we saw a bear cub. And that was back to back, and that was it. Besides a lot of deer and
any moose,
no moose. You know, we went through
a surprise.
No, we went through Glacier National Park, and they have you watch this 20-minute video about bear safety, and then you're walk. So Glacier National Park is really overgrown. So you're walking through chest deep or over your head brush, and you just kind of laugh because you can't see the bears.
You're on top of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did expect Glacier to be a little we were excited to get there, and we're thinking the trail might be really nice because some of the trail we were on wasn't, and we got there and we were surprised at like how overgrown the trails were. It's like, well, if we did see a bear, we really might hear it, but we wouldn't see it.
Yeah,
because yeah, it's pretty bushwhacky.
It is. When we saw the mountain lion, though, we were taking a break and we were on a Forest Service road, and Justine's air horn worked. It did the trick. It took right off.
Huh. Wow. That's now one of the things. By the time you hit Glacier, it was still early in the season, and maybe they hadn't had a chance to carve out a trail. What do you think? Is that a possibility?
No, we start talking to other PNT hikers, and they did say that that is very common. Maybe Glacier wants you to have that backcountry experience. I mean, it wasn't the whole trail. The passes were good, but it was just certain sections. It was definitely over your head. So every hiker we'd run into, we'd ask, hey, did you know the trails are like this in the backcountry? And nobody really knew that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't know that. Right, you would think a national park. I don't know. I just assumed they have the best trail maintenance.
But with, I do have to say, with Glacier, though, they really do have it dialed in on the bear safety. At your camp spot, they have places where you're designated to camp. They have an area where you designate to make your food. And they also have it so you have bear hangs set up. So the bears are really accustomed to that. And there's a lot of people that come from all over the country, all over the world that come to Glacier International Parks. And it makes it easy for people that don't have a lot of experience with that. So,
and that's important.
Very important.
Bear hangs, meaning you tie your food, anything that, all your belongings and string them up in a tree?
Correct. Anything, any kind of food, any kind of anything that has smells with it, which could be wipes, soap, people that use deodorant on trail, that kind of thing.
Well, something I thought was really neat, too, for this is that when you watch the safety class and they talk to you about going in the backcountry, you're not even allowed to take your food to where you're going to camp. Like, the idea is you walk in, you look at the little map, you see where your kitchen and bear hang areas. That's where your food drops. Food never makes it into your camp spot. It's definitely not allowed, and they're very strict about that. So we felt very safe there.
Yeah.
Now, as you moved westward, did you lose being in grizzly country?
We did. On the other, like, once you hit the North Cascades, is when you start losing grizzly bear country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the first two through hikers that we met had skipped, they said roughly about 400 miles because they were two young women and they didn't feel comfortable hiking through grizzly country, which I get if you're not used to it. It's scary. I mean, I definitely had a hard time going to sleep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have hiked about 250 miles of the Appalachian Trail. Mm-hmm. And what a relief. I was a different person there hiking there because there was no concern of grizzly.
Yeah.
Just black bear. But, you know, that's a concern as well. But it's a different kind of concern, you know, that the last thing I want to run into here is a grizzly. And whereas once you're in an environment where you're not, that's not an issue, I found myself more relaxed. Did you find yourself more relaxed as you got to the Cascades and over?
I definitely did.
Well, I think too, is animal wise, is people. We try to camp because there's a lot of sections where you don't get a pick where you camp. If you find a campground, that's great because that's kind of a designated campsite area, obviously. But it's when you're on a Forest Service road and you're hiking and it's night out and you kind of have to get off the road that makes you nervous because you don't know who can just pull up.
Right. That's another concern.
Yeah, it's easier the farther you are out.
We are here with Justine Murray and Matt Connery talking about their experience on the Pacific Northwest Trail that they began in mid-June, and as a fundraiser for the Ethan Murray Fund. Let's take a music break, and we'll let Justine introduce this song by Moby and why we have it on the playlist.
So this was one of my son's, Ethan's, favorite songs and has become one of mine as well.
Everloving by Moby. We're here on the Tuesday morning show. It's your Thursday morning show, hosts. Don't be confused. It's Tuesday the 14th.
I am. Why can't they?
Yeah, I know. It does feel weird. Doesn't it feel like the week is almost over?
Like tomorrow's Friday.
Yeah. It's Jack and Jim, your hosts, and Justine Murray and Matt Connery from the Ethan Murray Fund are here as our guests. Stay tuned. Later on, we're going to have an interview with Gary Kraft from EcoFlight. He's a pilot who goes out observing wilderness areas across the West. So stay tuned for that in a little bit. But right now, we were just talking about trombones. You saw a woman carrying a trombone on your hike. Did she actually like play it? Could she play it?
She could play it. And her trail name was Slider. So that was good. No, but we took a picture for her and she took our picture. So it was nice.
Okay.
Now, did you guys have trail names?
We do.
Do you want to share or is this something that we only learn by being on the trail?
No.
Trail names are given that way, though. You do have to be on the trail, and you can't give yourself your own trail name. So it has to come from someone else.
Correct. But you know, Matt can give it to Justine. What do you think, honey? Is this one okay? You know, that sort of thing.
Justine is trail boss.
Whoa.
Watch out.
And yours?
Map. Because
we never get lost, ever.
Now, what did you use paper maps or a cell phone?
Both. I have a couple different apps on my phone that I use for navigation, and I actually do my own like PDF route of where we're going, and then also paper maps that are backup. And we have a Garmin device, GPS, that also has the route on that. So it's kind of like fail-safe after fail-safe. And then Justine this year actually was learning how to read the maps, which was amazing.
Cool, cool.
Yeah, because I never know where I am. That's the scary part. Matt's like, well, what happens if something happens to me? You should really learn this. And he's right.
Well, you know, I've spent chunk of this past summer watching on YouTube videos that people make of the Appalachian Trail. And there's like a watch device. You know, this is like something new to me that... hold that up to the mic.
Matt, hold it up right here.
You can see it. Yeah, now it glows. And what does that thing do?
It tracks everything. I just got this, and I got this after the trail. But there is a map on it, and it saves me from pulling my phone out and looking at it, too.
Taking off your backpack or going through. What pocket did I put it?
Saves That's time.
Yeah. No kidding. Wow. Yeah. And it keeps time. What is it like, not a computer, but like a cell phone that has all the different apps on there?
Pretty much. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not quite. It's designed more. It's not like your Apple Watch. It's more for people that are trail runners, hikers, doing outdoor activities.
Okay. Mm. Okay. Now.
And you can see an actual map on there?
I can.
Okay.
Yes.
Looks. I mean, it's about what, an inch and a half across.
Yeah, it's diameter, tiny.
Circle. Yeah. In high resolution, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Now, at a certain mileage marker, something happened.
Something did happen.
Do you want to share with us what happened?
Yeah. So about, I don't know exactly what mile. That would have been good to know, but.
I think it was roughly around 300 miles.
In. Okay, 2 weeks, mm-hmm. 2.5 weeks in, maybe two. We eloped at Caribou Creek and Priest Lake.
Cool. Tell us about that, because we were talking while the Moby song was playing that this wasn't a spontaneous, this was planned. And the coordination of that with all the family members and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, it was a fast planning for sure. And then a lot of it did take place on the trail. But my mom flew in from Florida. My sister-in-law, Rebecca, flew in from Illinois. And then we just had some close family and friends. I mean, we wish it was that event where we could have invited everyone. I mean, we definitely, like, it was really hard, but it was really quick. And we just wanted a small, intimate group that we could, you know, not disturb the land where we were getting married, because it was on a creek bed. It was in Priest Lake. I rented an Airbnb for 2 days. And it was really great. Something funny, though, my daughter was like, I'm bringing you a dress. You are not wearing your hiking clothes.
That's Cora, right?
Yes, Cora. Yeah. So I said, no, really, we're wearing our hiking clothes. It's what we've been wearing. Gosh. We're totally doing this. And that's okay. You can forget the dress. So she did. She didn't bring the dress. But yeah, we got married in our hiking clothes that we were wearing during our hike.
Mm-hmm. You didn't, I think.
What did
I
you
think,
do with all the gifts? You know, I mean, the toaster oven and the mixer.
You ate, but then you ate real food, I'm assuming.
Yes. So our lovely friends, Judy and Gordon, Judy owns the Tango Cafe and prepared the food. And it was lovely. We had around 22 people, and they did a really nice summer barbecue with beautiful food. And it was great. We were so thankful.
Cool. Hey, speaking of food, so the trail passes through some towns like Eureka, Montana and stuff. When you were coming into a town, what was on your mind as far as food goes? What were you most looking forward to?
All of it.
did you start having like dreams? Like, I'm going to have pancakes, and then I'm going to have a cheeseburger, and then pizza.
Yeah,
You do. Yeah. That's constant. Yes. Uh-huh. And so the first 600 miles, we did something which is called cold soaking. So you have like your Talente ice cream jar, and obviously the ice cream is gone. what we did is minute rice, refried beans, and chicken those are freeze dried, and you add some water, shake it up, and it just sits in your pack. So we didn't have a stove, so having a hot meal was
so
really
you
good.
hiked without a stove
for the first 600 miles.
Okay. That saves a lot of, it's not only weight though, but stoves are not, you know, shapeable, you know, that they're a definite shape and you have to pack around it.
Yeah,
they're unforgiving.
True. They're also very compact now, so you can get it all into your pot. Okay. So you just have your pot.
But it's all the hot food that takes up weight. Like, this was just easy. We did Ziploc bags, and it's really nice because let's say it's ready to go at noon. You could take a few bites on your rest, put the lid back on, have it in a couple hours, and continue. So
it was frustrating after a while to actually have to stop and cook once you get used to that.
It takes time to set it up and to, you know.
Yeah, the day I knew I was over cold soaking was we were getting close to, was it maybe Glacier or Yak?
Eureka, Montana.
Okay, Eureka. And Matt, that previous day we were hiking in, had opened his container of his food, and just the smell of it like turned my stomach, and I wasn't able to eat it for the rest of the trip. So we had to bring in a stove, and I started doing more like tuna packets with crackers and wraps, and
which is edible, which are good, you know. But I'm going back to, I'm flashing back to their wedding ceremony. Do you trail boss take map as your what fun?
I actually did wear a backpack when I got married.
No. Oh my gosh! Well, wonderful, wonderful. How about pack weight?
Oh, touching back with the wedding. We ran into a couple thru hikers 2 days after we got married, and his trail name was Peter Pan, and he said that I was living every dirt bagger's dream.
So by getting married on trail.
Yeah. Ah. In our hiking clothes.
So. It was hilarious. Yeah.
And where were they from? Do you remember?
Ooh, Pennsylvania. One, I think the girl was Hope, was her trail name, and then she was from Pennsylvania, and he was from Texas or Arizona? Texas.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful, wonderful. Real briefly, how heavy were your packs?
It varied. So your base weight is everything you carry except food and water. And I think we're around 12 to 15 pounds usually. Mm-hmm. But with food and water, it could be 25-ish pounds. As you go on through a section, your pack gets lighter because you're eating all your food.
Right, right. The trail has ended. The hiking has ended. What happened next?
Oh, that's a good one. So, well, we know that there's a big thing of post-trail depression. And, you know, we're out here raising money for mental health, so this all ties in together. If you think about it, like when you're out there hiking, you know, 20 miles a day and then you stop, everything in your body, your endorphins, your serotonin, everything in your body's like, what? Wait, what are you doing? And it can go really dark quick. So we knew this because we hiked the Idaho Centennial Trail, and we didn't do much after, and we really were affected with some pretty serious depression. So this time we took measures and we're like, okay, we're going to have a plan when we get back. You know, our metabolisms are going to be going off and still want to eat like we're on trail.
That's right.
Our endorphins are still going to be like, get off the couch. Mm. Wait, you can't go back to work yet. You got walking to do. So we have started getting up super early in the morning every day and either trail running or hiking the Mikinic Trail because of the hills there. And it really gets your heart going and you don't have to go far to feel like you've done something. Or trail running is new for us, but we're finding out doing that every morning is giving us the same kind of feeling as being on the trail and bringing those endorphins and keeping our mental health in check and making the day a lot better.
Well, it's the rhythm of the trail. You stop when you want to stop. You eat when you want to eat, when you're hungry. I mean, there's no really clock outside of your body telling you.
There's not. And just being back in town, it's really weird going, oh, I have to go find a bathroom. You know, little things like that.
Or you have to be off the air at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, the rules.
Yeah.
It's a really simple but not easy way to live, because all you have to worry about is make sure you have enough water. Otherwise, you have everything yourself on your back.
Did you pick huckleberries along the way?
I did.
And were they big? They
were the best this year. I can tell you there's whole operations going on north of Bonners. We ran into just huge crews out there with different license plates than even our area. And they are just really picking up there. But there was still some for us.
It was a good year for the berry.
Yeah, it really was. Yeah.
Huh. Well, I didn't get any of those berries, Jim.
You got to go out and get them. People are not going to knock on your door and say, "Here, Jack, here's some berries for you."
Well, I think
James, get James going.
I believe there were some Snickers bars here around Halloween that you partook of, but I didn't.
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, just keep me in mind.
Let's move on. Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. Okay. All right. I thought it was a bad year for huckleberries, but I guess I'm wrong. It was a good year.
Where I was, it was good.
Okay. Well, that's great.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What's next now for the Ethan Murray Fund? You've completed. Hopefully, you've raised a good amount of money. And what's in the future for it?
So how we kind of finished up the project when we did our last Idaho Centennial Trail Hike is we offer a slideshow for the public. It is free to attend, and it's going to be on Sunday, December 10th, which we're thinking the afternoon around 3 p.m. We will have a silent auction as well. So if anyone out there would like to donate any items for that, we would be very appreciative. We've gotten some great donations already from our local community. So again, that will be at the Heartwood Center, December 10th. At 3 p.m., it'll be a slideshow and silent auction about our PNT hike and the Ethan Murray Fund. And all of our board members are going to be there, so I'm super excited to introduce them, too.
Wonderful. And could you talk a little bit more about where the money goes to in terms of mental health services? I think that's important that people hear once again where the money goes towards.
Yep. Right now we're working with counseling offices in our area to offer those services for people that fall between the gaps, can't afford it. One of our counseling services that we work with, she just reached out and said that there was a client whose insurance was going to be dropping in January and no longer use her insurance and won't be able to afford to keep going. And she thought it was very important for this client to keep coming to see her. So we have offered to, you know, the Ethan Murray Fund to help with those costs. So that's one of our big ones right now. Obviously, our big dream is a crisis center here in Sandpoint. We're still trying to collab with other organizations. We have just met up with the Prummer Foundation and NAMI Far North to talk about those things and you know, see the possibilities in the future for that.
That's the possibilities are that I could see something very cool happening there. And you've got some good organizations collaborating. I'm sure something will come our way, and hopefully we'll hear about it when it does.
We're pretty excited, and also just to touch too, we're trying to do more outreach. Definitely, mm-hmm. a lot of people seems to be working a lot, and we've gotten a lot of good feedback. So we're like, let's do some more. So we want to work with the Panada and bring some speakers and some films here that are bringing more awareness to the world of mental health and breaking stigmas. So.
Sunday, December 10th, the slideshow and silent auction. Is it weird for you guys to kind of mentally transport yourselves back there and from December, try and put yourself back in that space and describe the experiences?
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just getting it to that point is what makes you nervous. And then once mm-hmm. we're in it, it's a lot of fun. We enjoy sharing our stories with people. So,
yeah.
Yeah. And the community, we definitely like feel like, you know, we couldn't do this without them. So this is kind of our way. We feel like we can give back, because a lot of people do ask us a lot of things like, how was it? Tell us, why do you thru hike? Like, why would you go out there and do that? And this is a good way we can talk about all those, you know, questions and spend that time with our community as well.
Do you have plans for the next hike?
She said she's never going on another through hike, but hiker math kicks in and time, and she's talking about already getting back out there. So
yeah,
it changes. Yeah,
yeah.
During it, it's hard, and you think, oh, I can't ever do this again. And then when you get home and you have that time, you're like, wait, I can do it again.
Yeah,
all those mosquitoes and all those worry or concern about that thunderhead up ahead. It gets a perspective, doesn't it?
hey, you never answered my question about food. What did you crave? Or maybe what was your...
Ooh.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, number one, pizza all the time, every day. I mean, all you talk about on trail is food. I'd be like, Matt, if we could eat right now, would you rather have biscuits and gravy or pancakes with like two pieces of sausage links? Uh-huh.
Sausage. Uh-huh. I was craving seafood for some reason. And
oh, interesting.
Yeah. Well, I didn't get any until we got to almost Anacortes in the Puget Sound. And Justine knows everybody, even in the Puget Sound, it appears. Mm-hmm. And a friend of hers and her husband picked us up and took us to a place. And so I got some seafood.
Yeah, it was lovely. And she's a customer of mine. She comes in the shop. That's how I met her. And she says, hey, I'm over in Bellingham. We're part-time in Sandpoint. We want to help you when you're on your hike. So Perfect. Her and her husband showed up, and it was really sweet and great and felt really good to be supported. We're very grateful.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Well, speaking of your shop and giving back to the community, one of the things I remember from a previous visit, and I did donate socks.
Yep.
Can you talk a little? I just think that's neat as can be.
Yeah. So we call it Happy Feet 7B. So basically, we collect socks all year round. They have to be new. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, would you rather be gifted a pair of new socks or used socks? So I'm all about the new socks. And I know for Ethan, when he was experiencing homelessness, socks was everything. Dry feet is, and for our
crucial,
hike, crucial. And another cool thing that we just started doing, I don't know if we were able to talk about this, but a blanket company we carry that was formed in San Diego called Sackcloth and Ashes. Every time you purchase a blanket from them, they donate one to a homeless shelter. The founder's mom was homeless, and he started this blanket company and for her and what she had to go through. So ours were going to Spokane. They mostly work with cities. And I asked them if they could change it and we could do something rurally here in Sandpoint, because rural areas get missed a lot. And so this year they changed it over, and our blanket donations are going to Bonner County Homeless Task Force here.
Excellent.
So
excellent.
It's a win-win for everyone. I love products like that. We do a lot of give backs like that.
I do know. I think I was talking with Lydia about ordering cards that don't have the plastic. You know, what I find very interesting is the ways in which you're thinking about the products that you sell. And but I just think we all get, I know I do, around holiday time, I get socks, mm-hmm. and, you know, with bears on them and different mm-hmm. sorts of things. And I don't wear them, but I just, you know, I leave the label on and everything. And then I just discovered a pair the other day that I go, where did they come from? So mm-hmm. they will end up at La Chic Boutique in their Happy Feet. And I think that's wonderful. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. And one other little quick note about the Sackcloth and Ashes blankets. The box that you're gifted with your blanket, if you take your blanket out, it has a list and blankets crossed off, and it says other things to donate locally.
Perfect.
To your shelter or food bank. And it's like toiletries and different things. So people can also give back when they take their blanket home.
Yeah.
We are here with Justine Murray and Matt Connery. For this past hour, anything as our time is winding down, anything that we've not mentioned you'd like to remind us or?
Yeah, I would love to close and just saying like thank you to our Ethan Murray Fund Board and all they do and all they did while we were on this hike and continue to do for us. Like we couldn't be here without them. So we're very grateful. And just a little touch on one day that I was talking to Matt on the trail. This is just a little story. I said, you know, there's nothing I can compare through hiking to. Like I was really trying to dive into like why I do it personally. And Matt probably has his own reasons as well. But I was like, why do I do this? It's hard. It's challenging. Mm-hmm. It's all these different things. And I thought, you know, the only thing I can compare it to, and they're two different experiences completely, but is grief. And so I looked up like, why am I like really focused on that some of those feelings transform over to through hiking? And I thought this was really good that is why part of that is you have to find a way forward. Even when the path is tough, you have to discover like your inner strength and resilience. And both of those emphasize the importance of one step at a time. And I feel like that with grief as well. Like those are definitely like where they do cross over and feel like there's some similarities.
Did you find, I'd be sort of curious, when I was hiking the Appalachian Trail, you're not being bombarded with the busyness of a day here in town, and like your feelings are much more closer to the surface, and you can tune into them, you can touch them, and they're more immediate. Does that make sense, Justine?
Oh, it absolutely does. There's definitely a lot of time for that. And yeah, your mind just becomes, everything just slows down so much. I feel like mindfulness is a big one. You are able to like process things maybe you can't in your busy daily life. It gives you that space.
Sorry.
One last thing I want to say is that I went to your website and where about us, and you have all the pictures of the different board members. But the one of you hiking, it looks like a shale trail, you know, that going. Do you remember where that picture was taken?
That, if I'm on the right one, that was on the Yellow Brick Road, which is the Pacific Crest Trail.
Ooh.
Yes.
Yeah, but, like you're right out there in the open.
Yes. There's several places like that, even like in the Pasayton and Glacier.
It's beautiful. Yeah. Thank you guys so much for coming in. And December the 10th at 3 o'clock at
the Heartwood Center.
The Heartwood Center.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Thank you. Silent auction and a slideshow. And the proceeds go to the Ethan Murray Fund. And love to have you guys both back on the air. You know, if you ever venture out on a trail again, or even if you don't, you know, how progression towards the mental health center, that would be wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you both so much. We've got a song here. We're going to do the Santana one. It was on this date that Santana released one of their biggest hits, Black Magic Woman, November 19th in 1970.